Chapter 48 Dragon Form. If you've never seen a dragon up close, you're probably still alive. I was 400 yards away from it when it landed, and that was too close. Traveller and 1,000 other horses reared in terror at the smell. There is no smell like that of dragon. The sky chose that moment to flare some malevolent lightning behind it, giving everyone a breathtaking vision of the massive creature. Words cannot do it justice. I'd seen the dragon at Timberwatch from afar, the one that had slain Horka, and who had paid an eye for the privilege. It had wreaked havoc across the battlefield before Horka drove it away, but I hadn't had to face it in battle myself. This specimen was smaller, a mere 4 wagon lengths, plus another for its snaky tail. The mouth was still large enough to swallow a horse and rider, and its rain-slicked wings were large enough and strong enough to topple the castle's lone tower, now aflame, when it landed alongside it. Its claws raked the wall apart like it was a pile of pebbles. But it was the fearsome, fiery breath that was the worst aspect of the dragon. The beast seemed to have no end to its supply, and it bathed the castle in flames around it as it settled into the bailey. We watched in horror as men dove from the walls into the moat far below, their clothes and even their metal armor afire. Some simply died where they stood, instantly incinerated by the blast of dragonfire.
"Dear gods!"
I heard someone scream as its tail whipped against the wall, tearing a huge scar across it.
"Is that thing real?"
"Illusions don't stink like that," I replied hoarsely.
"Minilan!"
A contact screamed in my mind. "Telemann, I'm alive. I'm outside. Thank the gods. How many?
Only a few hundred, I think. Had it arrived an hour ago, it would have been us all. But that charge saved our lives.
The battle isn't over yet. Now there's a dragon and a goblin army to fight," I reminded him sourly. "I can't thank you enough for talking me into getting back into action, Turl. To think I was missing out on all of this fun." I broke contact, because we were both too busy for witty banter right then. He had to reorganize his lines to take the dragon into account, and I had to activate our dragon contingency. I made contact with Pentandra.
"Penny, tell Dara to get her magic bird in the air," I said, just as I saw and felt it streak over my head.
"She had it out the moment she saw the dragon,"
Penny replied smugly. "I'm monitoring her right now, and we have plenty of guards. We're in no danger. Go kill something, preferably that thing."
I couldn't think of a witty reply to that, so I tried to get us regrouped instead. The goblins had taken advantage of the temporary panic of our horses and had run to engage us viciously. But our infantry and archers were not impaired like our cavalry, apart from a few men who literally shit themselves when they first saw the dragon. And while both sides of the line saw some fierce hand-to-hand action, we were holding our own. The Count was regrouping his own cavalry for a renewed charge, or a hasty retreat, depending upon what the dragon decided to do. Goblins could be dealt with by steel. Dragons needed magic to be defeated, I hoped. I opened a link to Tyndall, and then Rondell, and told them to pass on my orders to every magi they saw. Regroup on the left flank around that lonely oak tree, and prepared to go fight the dragon. I gathered up as many war magi I could myself on my way over, and contacted as many as I could on the way. Some, I was troubled to note, did not answer. I hoped it was because they were otherwise engaged. Telemann had escaped the castle with some Hawkins, but they were on the far side of the keep and would not reach us in time. He was trying to regroup and rally as many as he could, and would help when he could, as he could, but I couldn't count on him for this fight, except maybe as reinforcements later. I hoped I wouldn't need him. There were a lot of good war magi still fighting, and they had no problem disengaging from the goblins when summoned. A dozen of us who were mounted stopped under the oak, constantly watching the dragon's antics, while we waited for the others to rally with us. Even as we moved and watched for trouble, everyone had one eye on the dragon as it destroyed the castle. Tyndall watched with slack-jawed horror, while Rondell was thoughtful and so very, very pale. Taran was particularly interested, fascinated even. I heard swearing and prayers from around me as my colleagues tried to determine the best way to proceed, but Taran was studying the matter silently, his eyes a blur with mage sight, as he observed. He watched with a curious expression on his face, as the beast knocked a wagon-sized hole in the wall with its tail. The oak tree was situated next to the Great Cotton Road, and was until recently one of those picturesque spots one selects for a picnic, where one wants to enjoy the sight of a stately manor without having to be close enough to smell it. Now it had become a haven for the wounded and a few deserters. We ignored both as more and more war magi arrived, by horse and on foot. The topic of discussion was singular. How in Duin's name were we going to slay that dragon? "I've already tried a dozen spells at this range," Mavone said, disgusted, as his horse trotted up. "They just don't grab hold." "He's right," one of the Horkan magi, a man whose name I forgot, nodded grimly. "I leveled a Condorine entrapment that should have had it sitting up and begging, and it shrugged it off." Before I could speak, Lady Ithalia spoke, her preternaturally beautiful voice acting like a silver bell in a smithy to quiet everyone.
"Dragons are highly resistant to magic," she explained, "both for control and for combat. That is why my people stopped using them in war."
Her people? The Alka Alon were the ones who first tamed dragons to war? My head swam with that news, but she continued.
"They do have some weaknesses. Their eyes. They can be blinded. Their wings are vulnerable, although their membranes will grow back quickly if damaged. Their throat, near the region where their neck meets their body, is less heavily armored to allow greater movement. But there is no easy way to kill a dragon. They were not originally from this world. Indeed, they have been extinct for an age, and only the malevolent power of the dead god has summoned them forth once more. Because of that, they resist even the strongest spells as a natural virtue. Your best methods of attack will be indirect, therefore. It is still subject to physical damage, so transformational enchantments that affect the elements will be helpful. While intelligent, a dragon takes decades to mature to the point where it can even communicate, much less be subject to sophisticated spells that affect the mind. That one is less than a year old. It has an infant's instincts, not an adult's reasoning. Remember that. Don't waste your time and energy on subtlety," she insisted, "and attacks involving fire or heat are useless. Its own breath is hotter than any fire unaided by magic."
"I am so glad we didn't know all of this helpful information before the Battle of Timberwatch last year," Mavone said sarcastically. "It would have ruined the surprise." I decided I had better say a few words too. "We do have someone wielding a thoughtful knife. Dara, the girl who took the Witchstone at the fair. She's good with it, and not good with much else, which is why she has it and a more experienced mage does not. So if you see it whizzing by, don't interfere in it. But while we have our back turned to battle the dragon, there is still a battle raging behind us, and shamans are plenty ready to do us harm. I need 4 or 5 war magi who can devote themselves to defending our backs against them and keeping the greater battle from interfering with ours. Volunteers!" It took us another 10 minutes to get organized, and then everyone began hanging their favorite combat spells as soon as they knew their role. In that 10 minutes, the goblin right flank had collapsed utterly. Their center was holding, but struggling, and our cavalry was rallying on the far right for another charge, and the dragon had destroyed half of Castle Cambrian. The tower had collapsed half over the Great Cotton Road, the stones themselves still burning in the rain under the heat of dragonfire. The wall around it, 100 feet or more on each side, was shattered ruin, like the teeth of a man beaten in the face with a mace. The main gatehouse was still intact, but it was now abandoned, the wooden roof afire. The beast had turned, after making a few defiant roars, and had dedicated itself to clawing away at the keep, like a bear pawing a beehive apart to get at the honey. The bees inside, the few warriors who had yet to flee, peppered the dragon with arrows and quarrels. Every now and then a flash or spark demonstrated that there were still war magi within, fighting. Every rake of its mighty claw swept away masonry and woodwork like a brush, and everyone could see its jaws working as it gorged itself on every defender its greedy maw could find. I tried not to think about the hellish chaos inside as I prepared my own spells. Very conscious that this may be, indeed, my last few moments in life, I chose extravagantly. First, as proof against fire, the powerful Decarion enchantment that would allow a man to handle white-hot steel fresh from the forge. With the power of my sphere of Irionite, The complex and potent spell fell into place around me like a second skin. I had no idea what it would do against dragonfire, but it was the best counter to heat and flame I had. To that end, I cast the standard spells that would assist my body to resist damage and shock, if injured, and increase the intensity of the personal protection charms I already wore, as much as I could. A murmured mnemonic and a touch of my finger transformed the steel in my helm and breastplate temporarily, making them stronger and more resilient. Hells, I even whispered a private prayer to Brigga, for good measure. She was a fire goddess after all. That had to be some help against a dragon. I was as magically and mundanely armored as I could be as I faced the dragon. I had never felt more weak and vulnerable in my life. I took a deep breath as I saw my professional colleagues prepare themselves and stand ready. Tyndall, Rondol, Mavone, Taran, Sarakim, and dozens of others. High magi and rank-and-file war magi alike. I was startled to see Planus at the back of the crowd, and I summoned a link to ask him.
Planus, you aren't a war mage. Return to Pentandra, and miss the opportunity to witness the most interesting practical magic exhibition in living history? Come now, Mage Lord. If these good men can risk their lives, then do I not have an obligation to do likewise?
You're a practical adept, not a war mage. Not to be rude, but you're one step from being a village spellmonger. You have no place in combat.
From what I understand, mighty works and great deeds can be done by a mere spellmonger, he riposted.
I sighed. I don't have time to argue. I can't watch out for you in battle, nor would I expect you to.
I am not powerless, Mage Lord, nor am I stupid. I will not endanger myself unnecessarily, but if I see the opportunity where the talents of a mere spellmonger might come in handy, I will be happy to oblige.
You Remirans are infuriating, I said, and ended the contact.
I think that everyone who can get here has, I said out loud, as the last few war magi arrived. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go slay us a dragon.
We marched around the far left side of the battle, on the other side of the Great Cotton Road, to avoid unnecessary entanglements with goblin outliers. From our perspective, it didn't matter much if the rest of the battle was won or lost, because if we didn't kill this beast, or drive it off, it wouldn't matter. After destroying Castle Cambrian and us, it would go on to demolish Barrow Bell for dessert, and the strategic battle will have been lost even if the tactical battle was won. We didn't move too quickly, to allow the men who were not mounted to keep up, and as we moved, we organized into squadrons to focus on specific elements in the battle, according to our strengths and powers. But while we were marching, I noticed through mage sight a new spell being wrought, over the dragon's head, in the stormy clouds above. I suppressed a chill, my first thought being that the dead god had taken a personal interest in this battle, but then I recognized the style as standard Imperial spellcraft. But it wasn't coming from us.
Talaman, I asked mind to mind, are your men doing something over there?
We're trying not to die, he explained helpfully. I've got a score over here, but some of us are still smoldering. We might be able to do something eventually, but that's not any of us.
It's us, Pentandra admitted when I spoke to her next. There isn't a lot for us to do right now, as Dara is in position and waiting for you to be. So we were discussing the situation, and it turns out that this hedge mage from Brunaran, Alphys, Aldis, something like that. Anyway, the old coot is famous in some circles for weather magic. He mentioned that it was a shame all that good storm energy was going to waste. We started talking and, well, we're working on something.
A hedge mage? You're collaborating with a common village witch?
Do you really think this is an appropriate time to discuss class issues?
I'm just surprised, I admitted.
Don't be. He's still no archmage, but talent is talent. I don't even know if it can be useful, but I loaned him a witchstone.
You gave him Irionite. This just kept getting better.
I brought a few spare stones along, she said casually. Those three others that Mavone brought from Wenshire. I passed them out to those I thought could use them best, on a temporary basis. They're not connected to the dead god in any way, so there's no danger there. Relax, Min. I've got this under control.
Somehow, I didn't feel relaxed. We rode up to the ruined wall on the western side of the castle, and were able to ride through a gap in the ruined wall and into a fiery hell.
The shaped blocks of stone that had been painstakingly laid to protect the citadel were smashed and rent like crumbled loaves of bread. Some were melted, burnt to ashes, and some were still aflame. The foul smoke that rose from them mixed with steam, produced from the steady rain, creating a nauseating cloud that allowed the stench of battle to fade to a subtle counterpoint. And of course, the smell of dragon was everywhere. First rule of fighting dragons in the future, I noted to myself, olfactory spells. It took but a moment to cast one on myself and then on Traveller, and both of our moods improved significantly thereafter. But there was no disguising the powerful beast in front of us. It was perched on its hind legs, its head level with the third story of the structure, and its long, snake-like head was darting through the wreckage and ruin, flaming the survivors and eating them greedily. It took no notice of their screams or their attacks. Arrows were less than pinpricks, sticking harmlessly to its armored hide, and the strongest quarrels rarely did more than irritate its wings. The eyes of the dragon were small, and its head moved quickly. That would be a difficult target to hit. We had divided into three squadrons for the battle. The first, made mostly of dismounted war magi, took a position near the outer wall to secure our escape route, guard our rear, and prepare enchantments in support of our attack. The second infantry team moved slightly north around the ruined bailey, past the fallen tower and burning outbuildings, where it would attempt to attack the beast on its mighty flank. Somehow. Then there was my squadron, the charge it bravely with everything you've got and die valiantly squadron. Ah, the perquisites of leadership. I had stalwart company, at least. Mavone was preparing something nasty between his hands, a kind of mix of blue fire and lightning I didn't recognize, but which looked encouragingly ominous. Tyndall had a selection of war wands in his belt and a determined look on his face. Jendaran the Trusty, reveling in his new-found powers, was murmuring an incantation while a globe of darkness spun into being in front of him. A mage I didn't recognize focused his attention on a spinning whirlwind of force I also didn't recognize. Others I didn't know by sight steadied their mounts and readied their arguments for the dragon. It was instructive that our order had grown so large that I didn't know everyone in it anymore. I decided to lead with my most powerful force attack, a farine bolt that was little more than a plane of magical force sped along a trajectory, a magical arrow. While Lady Ithalia had made it clear that dragons were highly resistant to pure magic attacks, I had to test that theory. I'm just that way. As we began our approach, I spun the farine bolt into a fever pitch and looked around at my comrades. Any suggestions? Hit it in the kidney, Mavone directed. Why? Getting hit in the kidney hurts. Oh, that's as good a reason as any. Right kidney, everyone. Ready? We went toward it at a canter, wary of alerting it, but it wouldn't have mattered. It was hungry, as its snout chased screaming men through the ruins of the keep, stopping only to chew. Everything else was secondary. It didn't see us as a threat. It saw us as lunch. Its broad back was to us as we sped up, wound up, and finished our various spells. When we were 150 feet away, I shouted, "Now!" and released my bolt. Moments later it was joined by blue, fire, lightning, a black sphere, a green bolt, two different colors of yellow light, and other less dramatic manifestations of magic. I watched with anticipation as my bolt and all the others sped along the same trajectory and hit the dragon within a few feet of each other on its back. While my farine bolt, I was sorry to see, had no effect whatsoever, the others' spells each had some influence. Mavone was right. Getting hit in the kidney hurts. Only instead of turning around and presenting its vulnerable eyes to us in response, the dragon howled and swept its rear flank with its tail. It sounds comical, until you realize that its tail is thicker than an anchor chain and studded with natural armor plates. Whipped suddenly from side to side like that, it had a similar effect as an anchor chain. Moving fast, even while I was enchanted with augmented perception, the tail swung around from our left and knocked us all ass over elbows. I watched with horror as my horse's head came apart under the force of the blow. I felt like I had been hit with a wave of iron and probably lost consciousness for a moment. The next thing I was aware of was wetness on my face. My ears weren't working, but I could feel something hot and sticky and familiar on my face. When I could open my eyes and force my vision to stabilize, I watched the storm clouds overhead violently churn into a nimbus of chaos. When my arms responded to my commands again, my hand came away from my face wet with blood, but not as much of my own as I'd feared. Then the sensation came shooting back into my consciousness, and I realized that I hurt all over, especially my leg. I don't know precisely how long I crawled around the bloody burnt cobbles of that bailey, but the battle raged around me, having forgotten me. My right leg was pinned under what was left of my horse's hindquarters. I wanted to feel bad about that. Traveller had been with me for years, and I had never been closer to another beast. But the truth was I was so distracted with my own impending mortality, I didn't have the room in my heart to consider him. Later, if there was a later. It didn't help that my vision swam. I likely had a concussion, I diagnosed, as I struggled to my knees. My spells were keeping me awake and lucid, despite what my body was demanding. I became aware that I was still breathing, and I fought to encourage the process. When everything else is chaos, return to basics, my training had told me. Breathing was the most basic. Breathe in, breathe out, repeat as necessary. I felt the sweet, cool sensation of air filling my chest like an overheated bellows, and I rolled back over onto my back, once my leg had been pulled free, and tried to marshal my resources. I may have passed out, but the next thing I remember is the sudden, brutal re-establishment of contact between my mind and my sphere. I had almost forgotten its existence, much less its utility. I had not summoned the link, but the instant it was there, there was a booming voice in my mind, filled with the power of compulsion. Spellmonger Menelan, Mage Lord, you must rise. You must return to battle. The voice was soft, but strong, a compelling force that pulled my consciousness from the murky depths it sought in a time of crisis. To emphasize the point, my link to the sphere suddenly filled with magical energy. I could feel it course through my body with no clear point of origin, but wherever it touched, there was an instant restorative effect. It was as if I was coming alive, coming awake, and becoming aware, all at the same time. I went from lethargy near to death in one moment to the most alert and vibrant I have ever felt. There are restorative spells in every Magi's grimoire, everything from hangover cures to becalming cantrips to medical spells that encourage hydration. There were some powerful ones they taught us at War College, some so sophisticated only a few of the better Magi could manage them. But this enchantment was unlike even the best of those. It renewed my body down to the cellular level, invigorated and energized it beyond its normal capacity. It filled my very bones and sinews with the urgent desire to act. I gasped with the sudden onslaught of power, a milky green glow enveloping every pore of my body. I sat up automatically, my heart racing, my pulse pounding, my eyesight suddenly clear, my hearing perfect, and my perceptions enhanced as if I had cast a host of spells all at once. By Brigger's toasty tootsies, I felt like I could actually fight a dragon. The scene around me was a frantic cauldron of violence. The dragon had half turned to face the new direction of attack, which I found vindicating, since I would have been upset if our brave charge had resulted in nothing but a forgetful sweep of its tail. I don't know which one of our spells worked, but someone's attack had gotten its attention. It had abandoned the search for food in the ruined castle and had turned its sinuous neck around in alarm, snapping at the irritants that had bruised it. The irritants in question were still doing their best against it. Mavone was huddled behind the corpse of his own horse, furiously preparing another spell. His usually neatly groomed face was covered in a blend of dust, ash, sweat, and blood, and there was a nasty wound in one of his thighs. Brave Jendaran the Trusty was actually on his feet, a war wand in one hand while he cast protective spells with the other. His armor was singed and smoldering with every falling raindrop, but he seemed otherwise unhurt. I turned my head and saw Tyndall on his knees, a wand in each hand, three or four expended wands in a pile in front of him. The lad wasn't well-schooled or sophisticated, but he was thorough. He was pouring every charge from every wand he had at the beast. Someone's body sprawled nearby, and Tyndall had dragged a discarded infantry shield over it to help protect him, if he still needed protecting. and Planus. Planus was standing calmly in the middle of the scene, leaning on his slender staff, staring up at the dragon and looking thoughtful. I almost expected him to be contemplatively smoking his pipe. There were others either running in retreat or charging toward the dragon, but I realized that even with my enhanced perceptions, that if I didn't get off my ass soon, I was going to be a casualty. I leaped to my feet with far more alacrity than I would have credited myself with, and with another heavy sigh, I slipped back into battle. My sphere took flight at my command, hovering shoulder-high behind and around me as I took stock. We were getting our asses kicked. The dragon did not seem damaged in the slightest by our attack. While it had enough arrows stuck in its armor to qualify as a giant hedgehog, none had done anything to slow it down. Our magical attacks may have hurt it, but there was no visible wound, no blood, no protruding bone or helpful smoking hole of destruction in its body. Just one highly pissed off dragon. Meanwhile, the number of bodies was piling up. The flanking team had been busy while I was unconscious, but that had attracted some draconic attention and another tail sweep, and half of them were scattered. The support team was continuing to lob spells from an unsafe distance, but they weren't doing much more than distracting it. I sprinted and dove next to Mavone. The dragon wasn't looking at me at the time, but I didn't feel like taking chances. "How is it going?" I asked casually. "I've had better evenings," he admitted. "I can't get a god's damned hook into the thing no matter what I try. It's the resistance," I spat, blood in my mouth. "Just like the Alka warned us. But something hurt it when we attacked. They aren't invulnerable. Horka hurt one. There has to be a way. Keep trying. I'm thinking of trying something in a Vandermeer bolt." That was pretty obscure. I had barely heard of it. "Good thinking," I encouraged, patting him on his armored shoulder. "I'm going to rally the troops." I waited for the dragon to whip its head back around toward the flankers. Then I sprinted back over Traveler's corpse, remembered to grab my fallen battle staff, and found myself near Tyndall. "Nothing is working, master," he lamented. "I'm down to 2-1s. "Forget it," I ordered. "Save it for the goblins." He nodded gratefully and put one of his wands in his belt. "So now what?" he asked. "Good question. I believe we had a secret weapon," I remembered. "Bide," I said, and closed my eyes. "Pentandra, we could really use that thoughtful knife about now." "It's on its way," she promised. "We were holding off until..." "What? My funeral?" "No, funny. No, we're working on something that might help, we think, but we need you to get the dragon to put its head up." "What the hells are you talking about?" "The dragon's head should be higher. Preferably fully extended," she said, matter-of-factly. "Above the level of the manor's highest point would be ideal. Penny, this is not the time to be thinking about its posture," I shot back angrily. "Will you shut up and trust me? Just get it to raise its head." I groaned and broke contact. "Guess what, Tyndall? Penny says we need to get it to raise its head. How are we going to do that?" The boy looked perplexed. Then I realized, even at 15, no, 16 now, he was in a battle against a dragon and an army of bloodthirsty goblins. He had killed grown men. He was no boy, and never would be again. "A fart?" he suggested unhelpfully. "Okay, maybe there was some boy left in there. If you can conjure up one that will irritate a dragon, great. Otherwise..." He did have a point, I realized. Lady Ithalia had said that this was a baby dragon, essentially, that they took decades to mature into their intelligence. I was assuming that meant it was prone to the same limitations as any other baby would be, reacting instinctively, not rationally, to stimuli. It was hungry, it fed. If it was attacked, it fought back. When it was sleepy, presumably, it would sleep. It had, I was guessing, the same basic senses that we did, and being exposed to strong negative stimuli was one way to compel it to react. I didn't want to blind it, despite the temptation. A blind dragon could not see a threat coming and could not react to it. I had no idea what kind of smells would repel or attract it, and considering it made a habit of exhausting sulfur-laden jets of flammable gas from its mouth, I wasn't sure I wanted to experience a smell strong enough to discomfort it. The way it was gobbling up fully armored warriors told me it had an unrefined palate and a wide range of taste tolerances, and that hide made tickling the thing as unlikely as hurting it. That only left me with one option. I studied the big head as it darted back and forth across the bailey, howling and occasionally flaming the irritants who were trying to kill it. Not the full-fledged devastation of dragonfire, but gentle little licks of flame only sufficient to put a village afire, for instance. "Can you manage a soundproofing spell?" I shouted in Tyndall's ear over the sounds of thunder, screaming, battle, and an upset dragon. He looked puzzled, but nodded. "Reach everyone you can in the bailey by mind. Tell them to do it too, quickly." Tyndall nodded again and closed his eyes. I did likewise, and in quick succession told Planus, Mavone, and Jendaran, who had wisely retreated behind some fallen masonry when his spell worked too successfully at attracting the dragon's attention. All agreed to work the simple spell and pass along word to others. Once they were warned, I got to work. Sound spells can be easy, if you know the principles involved. With a sophisticated ability to work with magical planes of force, vibration, and air currents, you can eventually produce just about any kind of noise. The simplest way is to create a magical plane, solidify it just right, and then cause it to vibrate until it makes noise. It's the arcane equivalent of ringing a bell, sort of. This was going to be one big bell. Using power from my sphere lavishly, I cast a disc of force, about 2 feet wide, and began it vibrating. As I poured more and more energy into it, the louder it got. I glanced at the dragon. No effect. So I changed the shape and size of the disc slightly, and then again as I watched. The noise got loud enough to remind me I hadn't done my own silence spell, so I slapped one on and kept going. Louder and louder the whine came, and I kept adjusting the volume and frequency until I saw the dragon cringe. That's when I knew I had a chance. I blew up that spell into a terribly frightful whine that made my teeth ache, even through my protective spell. "Penny, get ready," I said mind to mind, as I watched the dragon grow more and more upset by the noise. It looked about confusedly, its eyes whirling with panic, as I sought out the source of the hateful sound. After snapping blindly in a few directions, the dragon shook its mighty head and finally lifted its head out of the bailey and right into the position Penny wanted. "Perfect, Min," she shouted in my brain. "The head is up. Now what?" I asked. Instead of answering, I felt a wave of magic wash over me and do something interesting I couldn't put my finger on right away. My defensive spells didn't kick in, so it was probably not targeted at me, but then nothing in particular happened. "We're still having a hard time getting a hook," she revealed to me a moment later. "There's just too much resistance. If we can't get a target..." I groaned expressively at the admission. That dragon had been shrugging off our best spells like they were cantrips by a clown at a party. I saw Mavone launch what was probably a nasty and destructive spell into the dragon's belly when it was exposed. It barely reacted. I hung my head, feeling defeated. I was the most powerful human mage alive, and I couldn't do anything productive against this worm. I saw my snowflake pendant from Sevendor, the one Rundel had given me, and I wondered whether or not I'd ever see my cozy little land again. That, at least, was defendable against dragons. Any worm who landed at Sevendor would find itself far less resistant to magic and a lot more attackable. Too bad we couldn't drag this one's ass back there and dispatch it on the commons. That got me thinking, after I dismissed the amusing and dangerous idea of a dragon in Sevendor. It got me thinking about Snowstone. I had an idea. Without saying a word, I jumped from behind my cover and sprinted away from the line, toward our support people near the wall. That's hard to do in armor in a rainstorm, when you've recently suffered a concussion, but I wasn't going to let petty inconveniences get to me. I skidded to a halt near to a very surprised Sarakim, who was sitting discouraged on a fallen block, cradling his new Alka bow and waiting for more orders. I began talking, and then realized he couldn't hear me while we were both wearing silence spells, so I dropped them both. "Can you hit that thing?" I asked breathlessly. "The dragon, of course, Mage Lord," he said indignantly. "I have hit it repeatedly, yet none of my enchanted arrows can penetrate its hide. None of my spells are having an effect." I nodded. "It's the resistance, and I think I have an answer. Give me an arrow," I said, as I plucked the snowstone snowflake off my chest, breaking the leather thong that held it. It took me a few moments to thread the shaft of the arrow through the small hole at its center, and in the end I had to use some shaping spells. But within moments, there was a 5-centimeter diameter piece of balanced snowstone, 3 inches behind Sarakim's elaborately enchanted steel bodkin point.
"Can you hit it with this?"
I asked, handing him the arrow back.
"In the head. Hard enough to stick."
The Mwini war mage blinked.
"Of course, mage lord,"
he said, grabbing the arrow. With one smooth motion, he knocked, drew, aimed, and fired, sending the blue and black fletched shaft skyward towards the worm. If the additional weight of the snowstone hurt the flight of the arrow, I didn't notice it. What I did notice was how close to the dragon's throat it stuck when it did hit. While the beast didn't notice yet one more arrow in its armored hide, using mage sight, I was able to see it had jammed deeply enough into its armor to keep the snowflake pressed up against it. I sighed and contacted Pentandra.
"Whatever you're planning on doing, do it. You should be able to get a hook on it now," I said, explaining how.
She didn't discuss it. She tried it. I looked up to see what the nature of the spell would be, just in time to see a massive bolt of lightning zigzag across the sky. It emitted from the dark and foreboding clouds just overhead and hit the dragon within inches of its snowflake pendant. The beast howled with pain and shook uncontrollably when the bolt touched it. Its limbs went rigid as it convulsed, hurling its wings into the sky. The bolt was powerful, and in an instant, the smell of burnt ozone joined the smells of blood, battle, smoke, and dragon. The flash was incredible, a blinding bolt, and the peal of thunder that resulted nearly deafened anyone who wasn't already wearing a silence spell. That's when Terlaman's group spell, gusting the wind, swept by, catching the 2 big wings of the paralyzed dragon like a sail. Between the sudden, painful shock and the gust, the beast was forced to retreat. Everyone in the castle watched in speechless horror as the dragon crumpled, sprang back, and was pushed all at once. 1 minute we were fighting an angry dragon, the next minute it was falling over the castle wall and rolling down the hill to escape, right into the middle of the goblin center, where it collapsed, and collapsed on a couple of 100 unsuspecting Gavani. Everyone who could ran to the wall to watch the beast convulse and contort over the top of its erstwhile allies.
"Now for the hard part,"
I sighed, exhausted beyond comprehension. The spell that had reinvigorated me was already fading, and I could feel it.
"We knocked it down. Let's make sure it doesn't get back up."